like to talk and read all things books and mystery. Funny stories. The characters of youth always tend to be a sleuth. The hardy boys will do. Don't forget Nancy Drew. It's a clue.
Hello, sleuths. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Karen. Welcome to It's a Clue, a faux crime comedy podcast for amateur actors in love triangles. Kelly, today we are discussing Nancy Drew and the Clue of the Dancing Puppet. Emphasis on the T. I don't know why I did that.
Which T?
Puppet.
Oh, puppet.
There was only one.
I was like, Nancy Drew.
As always, I have an opening thought for you to ponder.
It's my favorite part.
It's kind of a little more like story time, but given that this
I
is
love
a
story time ponders.
This is not just a theater adjacent book. This is fully a theater book.
It's like a full immersion theater book.
Indeed. I would love if you could share a story from your theater career that you will never forget. Something that you can't stop thinking about. Something that keeps you up at night.
There are so many of those stories, Karen. We had to evacuate the entire venue during Cats one night because the smoke alarms went off and it was just a bunch of cats in cattails standing around a loading dock, which felt kind of on the nose. I'll give you one that's apropos to this book, though.
Okay.
Much like Nancy had to go on last minute as an understudy, I did too.
I don't want to stop you, but I think you've told this story on the podcast.
I have not. This is a different one.
Are you real? Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh!
So this was when I was in college, and I stayed behind one summer to like be able to stay in the dorms and stuff. So I got a job on campus, and kind of early on in the summer, there was a youth theater show for the little tykes in the area who are still in school.
Oh.
And we did this production of Beauty and the Beast.
Cute.
But like old play Beauty and the Beast, not Disney Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
Neither here nor there. Anyway, have I told this before?
No, I've never heard this story.
I was actually in the show, which was unusual, but I did have a part in the show. Is that true? No, I was a stage manager.
Okay.
I was a stage manager, but one day somebody didn't show up. Like, I think it was the Beast didn't show up.
Okay.
It was a relatively important part. And we couldn't get a hold of him. So... And we had, 900 little kids sitting in the theater already. Couldn't get a hold of the guy. Also, all just as a sidebar, he had been mocking us theater nerds the day before by breaking one of the cardinal rules of the theater, which was saying the name of the Scottish play over and over again. And
we kept trying to.
And next thing you know, and spoiler alert, he was fine. He just slept through an alarm clock.
Never work in this town again. Dayton, Ohio, never cast him again.
Until I got a hold of him. Anyway, I had to go on as the Beast carrying a script.
Stop it.
So yeah, that was one of my least favorite days ever.
Horrifying.
Horrifying. Truly horrifying. Unlike Nancy, I did not have everything memorized. I did not fit the costume, and I didn't want to do it. Just
sure.
To be clear. I was resistant. So yeah, there's one I'll never forget. How about you? I know you've got some.
Oh God. I have a lot too, but the one that came to my mind as I was writing this question, I think I've told you this before. I don't think I've ever mentioned it on the podcast, but also doing children's theater. This was right when I moved to California. Mm. I was on tour with Hansel and Gretel, and
the German pronunciation.
Hansel.
Hansel.
I did.
What's an umlaut? Is one involved in that title?
It's not, but it.
Yeah.
But it should be question
Could
mark.
Could it be Hansel? Anyway, go on.
I was. I played two roles because these characters did not appear simultaneously. I was both the, like, bad mother of the children that cast them into the forest, and I was the candy witch.
And is there more than one witch?
No, but she's just notorious as a witch.
I get it.
For her candy.
It's like, how many witches are in this thing? All right, I get it. Sorry.
And so, when I first came on stage as the witch, the candy cottage witch, I had like a monologue that I did about like, I smell children, blah, 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 whatever. And this was the first time we had done this in front of a group of children. I didn't realize that one of the words that I'm about to say is like very verboten for young people. And so in this monologue, I say, children are very easy to catch. They're really quite stupid. And when I said this, I think we were somewhere in Nevada. A collective gasp came out of the mouth of every child in that theater.
It's stupid?
It's stupid. Yeah, like you're super not supposed to say that. And
oh, man.
We didn't know. And
yeah,
a little boy stood up in the audience and at full volume. And this was like a big audience. This was one of our biggest shows. I think there were like 500 kids in this audience. Stood up and at full volume goes, "Who are you calling stupid, witch?" And screamed it back to me on the stage. And it is, I swear to you, the only time I have done so many performances, it is the only time I have ever broken on stage. Like, I went like, and I just like couldn't get words out. Like, I couldn't. And I just kind of made that sound. I was like, and then I ran back into my candy cottage and closed the door, and that was the end of my monologue.
Karen, that is amazing.
The other cast was standing off stage, and they were just like staring at me with like these huge eyes,
dying laughing.
And they got it. They're like, "Well, she cut about 6 sentences off of that monologue, but fair." And then we carried on. But like, I
fair enough
could not. And then once I got into the candy cottage and had the door closed behind me, I was like
hysterically crying,
convulsing.
Like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my whole life.
It was magnificent. And then we like changed the script after that. We're like, well, clearly we can't say that. Like, that was deeply offensive to every child in this audience, and that's good information to have. So,
well, but hey, you know what? Maybe it'll keep them away from candy witches. You know?
Maybe it will. Maybe it will.
This was a teaching moment, Karen. You did them a service.
Learning moments.
That isn't, you're like, this is not meant to be interactive.
It
like,
was so interactive in that. All right. That concludes Thoughts to Ponder.
I loved it. This is my, should we start a spinoff podcast? It's just like theater stories with Kelly and Karen.
Theater trauma.
Truly. Truly. I'm still having it. So I have not gotten enough. So.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I get to be on the loudspeaker today.
Oh, fire that puppy up.
Daily announcement time, Karen. So first off, we have a new Patreon. Welcome to Emily.
Emily. Oh, Emily, we love you. Thank you for being a Patreon.
Welcome to the Helen Cornings, Emily. We are probably not the most talented baseball team out there, but we have the best intentions and the best snacks.
Our hearts are in the right place.
They are. Welcome. Also, Karen, we did not discuss this. Do you want to quickly look over the schedule I created and give me your thoughts?
I'm looking at it right now. It looks great.
You into it?
Ship it. Let's tell the people. Great. I think it looks good.
I made some decisions.
You know what? That is the greatest gift of all. I love not making decisions. So thank you.
You're welcome. I love making decisions. It's my like second favorite pastime after chocolate.
Oh, this is why we're a good team. Like, just tell me what to do. I'll be there.
So Karen actually made the suggestion that in the interest of, you know, transparency and proper communication, we should maybe both decide upon and then disseminate a schedule for the remainder of 2024.
Perfectly stated.
Thank you. So I made the decisions and here we are. So this is coming out on whatever day it's coming out. 2 weeks later, which will be November 16th, will be our next Nancy Drew book, which, as Karen will tell us at the conclusion of this episode, but spoiler alert, is going to be the next one in the series, the Moonstone Castle mystery.
Yes, it is, and I can't wait.
2 weeks after that, which will be November 30th, will be our first Super Sleuth of the season, which the Super Sleuth was determined and selected and voted upon by our Patreon Helen Corning group. So if you would like to help be part of these selections, please consider becoming a Patreon. End of plug. Be like Emily. Become a Patreon. So by like a not insubstantial vote, our first Super Sleuth of season three is going to be, drumroll Karen, the Hardy Boys Tower Mystery.
Oh, I have been craving a Hardy Boys mystery, and I can't wait.
I think we've got a lot of people that are going to be very excited, namely our number one Patreon, our father.
Our father.
Yes. Yeah. And then, Karen, I think that for our December 14th episode,
yes,
which will be our next regularly scheduled episode, I think there, okay, so in the poll, there was a one vote discrepancy between the number one vote and the number two vote on Super Sleuth titles. So I think we should do another Super Sleuth book as our final 2024 book and give ourselves a little bit of a break from Nancy.
I love that. And if they were that neck and neck, we have to honor both of them.
I could not agree more. So actually, hang on, I've got to pull up exactly what it is because I thought you were going to veto this, so I'm not prepared. Hang on.
You thought I would veto it?
I did.
Oh my god, I'm so amenable and you have great ideas.
Oh, thank you so much. So nice of you. What a doll baby you are.
And you're beautiful.
Oh, so are you, Karen. I need to pause and wipe a tear. Okay, so December 14th, I think it is going to be Super Sleuth number two, which is going to be, I'm so excited, it's going to be The Babysitter's Club Super Mystery number one, The Babysitter's Haunted House.
Oh my god.
Now, I fully recognize this is not real Christmassy.
Whatever. But... That's okay.
I will say ho, ho, ho at the beginning and the end of the episode, okay? If yeah. that will help everyone. Okay, great. I'm so excited for the Babysitter's Club.
I love that we're going to do a BSC for you finally because you are the biggest Babysitter's Club stan, as the young people say, ever.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite. I am a huge, huge BSC fan. So that will take us through mid-December, at which point Karen and I will be going on holiday break and we'll be returning mid-January, picking back up with Nancy Drew.
Nancy
so that's Drew. Kind of the plan. Okay?
The plan
we'll do
sounds...
one more Nancy.
Great.
Then we'll do a Hardy Boys. Then we'll do a Babysitter's Club. And then we'll all, you know, gather under the mistletoe for a couple of weeks.
We'll hibernate.
Also that.
I love it. I love it. Yes, let's do it.
Fantastic. Done.
All right,
as you
folks.
Said, it's shipped.
It has been shipped. It has been spoken.
Yes. Into existence. So what have you been up to since I spoke to you last?
I wish I had a better answer for you.
Oh, I never have good answers for this.
That's not true.
No, it's always true.
It's not true. I have been pretty useless. I have been like a lump on the couch since last we spoke. I kind of got through like my
answer.
Big travel extravaganza.
Yeah.
Of all of the things. I think I was about to go to Detroit the last time we recorded and I went to the Heartland Fall Forum, which is a regional book event that happens every year. And it was wonderful.
Jealous.
It was kind of like Scholastic Book Fair for adults in the book industry. I got to meet a lot of booksellers. Oh, also, I met the guy who owns Roebling Books, which is the chain of bookstores in your area. I randomly met him and I gave him your name and said, your number one supporter who's keeping your Newport store open is my sister.
I like that is a lot of pressure, but it's not untrue.
I know it's not.
Yeah. I'm considering getting a third job to support that. So.
He was super nice and he was like, oh, Taylor, thank you so much for coming to Roebling and I will have to look her up. And he knew all about the air. Anyway, lovely, lovely event.
Amazing.
But now I'm in the shoot towards the holidays, as one might say, where like it's getting cold. I am very tired. I have one more work trip coming up and then Thanksgiving and Christmas and stuff. And I'm just like, I'm ready to hibernate.
Same.
Kid you not, I was sitting at my desk earlier today during working hours and looked out and I saw snow falling from the sky.
No, unacceptable. Are you serious?
I am 100% serious. It wasn't like a lot, but it was precipitation that was not rain.
I do not like that, Sam. I am.
Yeah. So I am in snuggle-ump mode. Most importantly, though, I want to ask you, the last time we had this conversation, you were about to go to like a great soupening, like a soup event.
Yes, the soupening.
What happened? So you were going to bring white chicken chili. Everyone was bringing soup. People got to bring soup home. Please tell me what happened.
Okay, I'm gonna give you the parameters of this event in case anyone out there wants to recreate it, because it was perfect.
Okay.
Like 5 stars, no notes. So there were like, I don't know, like maybe 10 people that attended. Everyone brought basically a crock pot full of whatever soup they were offering.
I love it.
Which I think for most people was like a double batch.
Okay.
Of one item.
Also, can you set the scene? How many individuals was there? Wow.
About 10.
I need to know how much soup was.
There were like 10 giant crock pots of soup.
Oh my God. This is actual heaven.
Yeah. No, it was great. And like, there were no duplicates, even with no planning.
Wow.
So yeah, it was fantastic. There were tons of different kinds of soups. And then basically our host provided like, you know, small, like tasting bowls essentially, so that we could try some of all of them. There was a vote for everyone's favorite soup, and the favorite soup won the golden ladle, which I thought was a title, actually was an item. I did not win. That's okay. I didn't vote for myself either. The right person won. And then we had provided to us to-go containers. So we got to like fill up to-go containers of all of the remaining soup. And I'm still eating soup.
Okay. 2 follow-up questions.
Yes.
What was the winning soup?
Burgoo.
Makes sense.
Yes. And it was amazing.
Do you think everyone knows what burgoo is?
Probably not. I would just say it's not possible to describe. You just have to have it. It's delicious. I would say it's like kind of like a vegetable soup with meat in it.
Okay. Yep.
But it's delicious, and it's definitely a Kentucky thing.
Yes. I was like, I think it's like fairly regional, so I don't know if others
know. It's definitely regional, and I think it's even like more, like it's kind of specific to, really, I think it's Western Kentucky. But you know, it's migrated out slightly from there. So I live in Kentucky. It made it all the way here.
Shout out to Moonlight Barbecue, where you can get the best burgoo in town.
It's like, are we being sponsored, Karen? Because I would sell our souls for burgoo. I would.
Moonlight is delicious. Yeah. Okay. Second question. What soups did you return home with?
Broccoli cheese.
My favorite. That's my favorite soup.
Like a cauliflower, like kind of like an Indian spiced cauliflower puree thing situation with rice. Mm-hmm. Vegetable, burgoo. There were like a ton. A lasagna soup, which was amazing. What? Oh, Karen. Oh my. Yes, someone cracked the code on lasagna. They were like, this item is difficult to make, so let's just throw all of the ingredients into a pot and make it soup, including the cheese, and that is correct. Yeah, it's delicious. So yeah.
I don't mean to like bogart your next update, but
no,
this just revised my menu for this week.
Why?
Because do you want to say your update first and then I'll say mine?
I'm coming to see you.
I know you're gonna be here on Wednesday
in like 48 hours.
I'm so excited. I want to make, have you ever had cheeseburger soup? It's delicious.
Yes, please.
Great. I will have the defib nearby for when we both pass out. It's so good. I may have to. Okay, cool.
I was like, do we need to pause so you can notify your grocery shopping husband to get different things?
So, yeah, you're going to come see me.
Yeah.
It's going
to
be epic.
Can't wait. Yeah. We're going to go to all the bookstores. We're going to go to all the, like, local drinking and eating establishments. I get to meet your friends.
It's going to be a ton of, we're going to have a fire.
I'm going to beg your husband to make me a fire like 15 nights.
There, fires will occur.
I love a fire, and I can't have one here.
Well, we can.
The houses are too close together.
All right, well, get ready. We're going to have lots of good updates for y'all when...
Can't wait.
Once Kelly returns to her home.
Should we proceed?
Yes. I was like, I don't want to say it because I like when you say it so much. So
okay. Sorry. I hesitated. I was waiting. It's time for recommendation station. Woo woo.
Woo woo. Okay. I have two recommendation stations for you.
Hit me.
My first recommendation, I know that you will love this. So when I was at the Detroit event that I mentioned, I randomly befriended this woman who I overheard say the words roller derby, and I was like, hello, new friend. So we started talking. She is also a bookseller. Her name is Dawn. She was lovely. And we just started talking about like books we love and all of the things. She also has cats. It's just like book events are amazing. You're just like, I could be best friends with literally anyone
soulmates
in this room.
Everywhere. Awesome. Yeah.
And she recommended a book to me that she had read on audio. So I have listened to the audiobook as well. I don't have a paper copy of it, but it is called Sisters of the Lost Marsh, and it is by Lucy Strange. And it is very like, it kind of reminds me of that Aaron Morgenstern book, The Night Circus, a little bit. It's about six sisters who have kind of been raised to believe that there is a curse upon them. And their mother's passed away. They live with their dad and their grandmother. Basically, there is this troupe of performers called the Full Moon Circus, I believe. Full Moon Carnival that comes through once a year. There's a lot of like chaos going on in their family, and the sisters go. The oldest sister disappears. They think with the circus. And so our heroine of the story, the sister named Willa, who is our narrator, is on a quest to go bring the oldest sister back. And all kinds of things happen on this journey. She meets all of these interesting people along the way. Fun. It's dramatic. It's intense. I think this is actually like a middle grade book, but you wouldn't know it as an adult reading it. I was like, cannot put it down. Absolutely just enjoyed it so much. So Sisters of the Lost Marsh.
Thank you. I've already added it to my Goodreads list. Thank you.
It's amazing. The second one that I will mention, I read this cover to cover this weekend. I got an advanced reader's copy at this Detroit event of a new Araminta Hall book. I love her thrillers. She
Me
is
too.
One of my favorite thriller writers. And I didn't know this, but Gillian Flynn of Gone Girl and Sharper Objects and other things, you know, she's one of the most famous thriller writers of all time. She started her own press. It's called Gillian Flynn Press.
Interesting.
And this is the first book that she's published as part of this press. So it's the new Araminta Hall book. It's called One of the Good Guys. It should be out January of 2024. So you can pre-order it now. You can go ahead and pre-order it from the library, I'm sure. Absolutely fantastic thriller. Did not see it coming. And I have laid my copy of it onto the bed in the Kelly room at my house so that when you get here, it will be waiting for you so that you can read it too.
I wish you could see my face right now. This is the dream.
There's also going to be several American Girl dolls in Halloween costumes waiting for you, so just get ready.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Karen, thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. My absolute pleasure.
I may just not pack a book then and read that. I'm going to listen to the Britney book.
Oh, yes.
In my ears on the way up.
I too am listening to Britney.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I haven't started it yet, but that's my travel audiobook.
Well, enjoy. Enjoy. Thank you. What do you recommend, Woo Woo?
I mean, I guess I'll just say as like a general umbrella, vampire season is officially done and truly not a moment too soon. I am fully saturated on vampire books. I'm not even scared anymore. I'm just kind of annoyed by all of them.
Really?
Yeah, they all just seem kind of whiny and like a little more emo than I'm looking for in my life. I'm over it. So
not the outcome I had predicted for Vampire Season.
What outcome did you predict?
I just happiness.
Well, that there is that. So anyway, yes, I read a lot of vampire books. I watched a lot of vampire movies. I am thrilled to be moving on to pretty much anything else. I like that also this was a self-imposed reading regimen that I'm like eye-rolling about. I'm like, nobody made you do this, Kelly. You brought this on yourself.
You did, but you know, sometimes you got to find out. You know what I mean? You got to go through the fire to learn. And
I did.
Oh, that was that like a vampire pun? Kind of a little. I don't know.
A little bit. You got to go through the fire and then your ashes.
See the sunlight.
Might as well step into the sunlight. I'm back into Outlander.
Okay.
I think I'm about ready to finish book 6 of Outlander. Pretty into it. But then I shall be moving on to like a combination of thrillers and rom-coms for the rest of the year. End of story.
I have no recommendations.
I'm just that's what's happening over here. So.
Well, I have been in Thriller Town for like a year, so I will hook you up.
I do appreciate you. So I've been in rom-com heavy land. So
well, bring me some. If you have some that you finished and you are ready to not house anymore, please bring them to me when you come on Wednesday. You got it. Thank you.
You got it. So Karen, I believe that you have compiled a little bit of backstory, as it were, for us on this puppet book.
Yes, okay? Let's talk Nancy Drew.
Please.
Okay, so today, as I mentioned, we are reading Nancy Drew and the Clue of the Dancing Puppet.
Mm-hmm.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention it's volume number 39. It was written in 1962 by Harriet Stratemeyer Adams, a.k.a. Carolyn Keene. Is anyone surprised? Did anyone gasp? I don't think they did.
I'm sorry.
No, it's just like, yep.
Yeah, right?
I think the only like really interesting thing I found about this book's history, this is one of the first ones we've encountered where no revisions were made. Like almost all of the ones we've read so far were rewritten. Like
dramatically rewritten.
At some point in like the late 70s or early 80s. But this one is just, it is what it is. Original text. I loved that on Instagram, one of our listeners who is at Dusk in Her Eyes left us a note and said this is her favorite Nancy Drew book, and she was so excited we were finally doing this one. So that really piqued my interest. I was like,
same. I saw that too and was like, okay.
Yeah. So like I just went in with nothing but excitement and joy. I was not let down. Spoiler alert. I do have a fun fact for you.
Ooh, okay. I love a fun fact.
You probably know this already, but... So in this book, kind of the main cast of characters is an amateur theater group called the Footlighters.
Uh-huh.
And in questing for fun facts, I Googled the Footlighters, and it was like, oh, yeah, there's totally a theater group called this. And then I was like, where are they? They're located in Kentucky.
Yes, which they
is,
are.
In fact, where you live.
I have been to the Footlighters before.
Have you?
Yes. Yeah, so they're like 4 blocks from my house. I walked there. Yes. They have a very, I'll take you over there next time you're in town. They've got a really cool little theater space too. It kind of reminds me of this. Like it's not in a barn, but like it's an old converted church.
Oh, cool.
It's very cool.
Oh, I love it. Well, so. In case you don't know, they're about to do auditions for Legally Blonde, the musical. Kelly, go try out.
No.
Do it.
No.
Please.
No. Karen, I want to be the kind of person that, like, Nope. I have too much stage fright, and also I'm too much of an introvert.
Kelly. Okay, I'm going to work on you on this. You have until December 5th, I believe. That's when the auditions start. And so.
You can certainly try.
I looked at the cast list, and I think that you should try out.
Should I be Elle Woods? Is that what you're thinking?
There are 3 roles that I have in mind for you, and I will let you decide which ones you think they are. But
all right,
just do it.
I'll let you convince me over a fire pit.
Excellent. All right. Well, with that, I've almost said threat dangled. It's not really a threat, but it's more of a challenge for me.
No, I think threat was the right word. I think you said the right thing.
We're going to move on to our one sentence plot competition. And Kelly, take it away.
Would love to. So one sentence plots are conducted on our Instagram. So if you can, give us a follow on Instagram. But I will say that this is one of our best rounds so far.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of competitors. Everyone did great. You really rose to the puppet challenge. Applause.
Applause, indeed.
So just to briefly describe for our listeners here the cover, in case you have not seen it. On the cover of this book, we see a very red-haired Nancy. I would say this is beyond Titian.
Indeed.
In a light blue dress. It's the middle of the night. Nancy is in a, like, flashlight action pose. Like, she's actively flashlighting. And
oh, my God.
She's staring very confused at a dancing ballerina who has, like, jointed limbs. And behind her, a hooded figure watches from the trees.
Ooh. That's perfectly described. Very spooky. Spooky.
So our winner this week of the one sentence plot is Aileen Bartels. I'm so sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Who said, Nancy thought it was ridiculous that she was required to audition for a role in the River Heights ballet production of Coppelia. But she carefully did her research by spying on a dancing doll puppet. That's the best. That's the best.
Oh, that sums up our Nancy journey so well. Okay, so I selected a runner-up. I actually selected two. I cheated.
Oh, fine. That's totally fine. Okay, that's so the right decision this week.
First runner-up is Amy Hawkinson, who said, thank goodness it's a marionette, Nancy whispered to herself. If it was a ventriloquist dummy, that would just be creepy. Which made me laugh so hard. But then I would be remiss if I did not also shout out at Tracy Trebendis for some solid American Girl content. Tracy wrote, unfortunately, the Nancy teen super sleuth American Girl doll was sold out. So she had to go with the slightly less popular Nancy awkward wooden marionette ballerina complete with creepy stalker guy doll instead. Both of which are AGs that I want now.
I know. I was like, I want Nancy Teen Super Sleuth American Girl doll.
I would buy that take all of my money.
Oh, I would buy two of them just in case something happened to the first one. Like, does she come with her pride and joy, a.k.a. a magnifying glass?
Magnifying glass, like fingerprinting kit, flashlight. Oh, God. American Girl, can you hear me?
We are your target demographic right here. Amazing. Well, without further ado, ma petite sœur, it is time for today's super fast plot, written and read by you.
I'm feeling nervous about this one. I kind of wrote this one in a hurry and I haven't re-scanned it, so I don't know what twists and turns I've thrown myself in this.
I think you're going to do great. You need to just believe in yourself.
Thank you. Thank you so much, pep talk.
Just pretend like you're auditioning for Legally Blonde the musical.
Okay. Nancy is summoned to the old Van Pelt estate, which is now owned by a theater troupe called the Footlighters. She learns from the current director, Mr. Spencer, that at night, and I quote, a life-size puppet and ballet costume has been seen dancing in various places, on the lawn, on the deserted stage, even on the flat roof of the shed. The Clue crew moves into the Van Pelt estate, living amongst the thespians to try to figure out what's going on with this ghostly apparition. They start by sleuthing around the grounds, and particularly the attic, where Nancy is concussed by a falling cannonball. She's soon double concussed when someone slams into her car and speeds away. We immediately get involved in all kinds of drama. Tammy, the lead of the play, is a massive diva and is being scorned by her co-star. The cast is on the struggle bus learning the new play, largely because Tammy is making them all feel terrible, and a second and even creepier life-size puppet of a witch starts appearing. Also, strange men from California keep turning up trying to throw Nancy off the case. At one point, the Clue crew follows Tammy and some guy named Chuck, who turns out to be her brother, to a dinner club called Green Acres. During their stakeout, a woman's emerald necklace gets stolen, and the two sneaky guys from California flee. The necklace isn't found on them, but Nancy suspects they took it and that they're in cahoots with Tammy and her brother. On her way home, the Californian creepies stage a roadblock and threaten Nancy, but she picks up an identifying scar on one of their wrists that starts to help her tie everything back together. While we keep sleuthing, Tammy gets laryngitis, so Nancy goes on stage as the leading lady of the play at the last minute. Everyone in River Heights freaks out, and it is the performance of the century. Bess also gets an upgraded role in the cast and plays her part with panache. In the end, we learn that the late Mr. Van Pelt, owner of the estate, was a talented puppet maker from Holland. He invented these life-size automaton puppets to entertain the children of the family. When he died, he hid a secret inside one of the puppets that would render someone a great fortune. This is why the guys from California are sneaking around and trying to scare people away with the puppets. They need to find the fourth missing puppet to get the treasure. They'd also rope Chuck into helping them, and he and Tammy, unfortunately, got in over their heads. The criminals are all apprehended, and we find loads of stolen jewels stashed in the backs of the three puppets in play. In the end, Nancy discovers the fourth puppet buried beneath the attic floorboards. It contains a drawing of a device for fuel cells, machines that produce electricity from chemical fuels, I guess? I don't really understand this, but specifically aluminum was important to these fuel cells in this case. Bess is excited because now Nancy will be rich, but Nancy doesn't claim the treasure and gets no reward. The end. All right, Kelly, please share with me at this time your general thoughts and musings.
Oh my gosh, I would love to. Okay, generally, loved it. Super fun read. Like, this gave me, like, all the nostalgic vibes for why, like, I remember in my brain loving Nancy Drew. It was everything I wanted.
Yay!
Yeah, how about you?
I thought it was just an absolute delight, if I'm being honest. And I would sum it up as saying this was an example of where keeping it simple was very beneficial to the overall tale.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some minor beefs in the past, some ground beefs, where it was just like too complicated. We were doing too mm-hmm. much, too fast, with too many mm-hmm. people. And we didn't mm-hmm. do that here. We didn't have to go someplace super elaborate. Mm-hmm. We still did have a fun new location to explore, though. We didn't have 10,000 characters, but we had mm-hmm. confusion and intrigue. Yeah, I just always love when we get like these new professions in River Heights too. Still haven't had a magician, but you know, the footlighters like delivered. They delivered on my need for
a performer.
Indeed.
We have a professional puppeteer, no magician, but
I know they're like teasing me at this point.
I feel like there's hope though, you know, where there's a puppet, there's a magician.
One would think.
Wouldn't you think?
We've also had like a circus with no magician.
We've had circuses.
Carnival
yeah.
with no magician.
Yeah.
Haunted house with no magician. I can't. But anyway, absolutely enjoyable romp, if I may say so.
Great. I think that sums it up perfectly. Says Siskel.
What was your first favorite part that you would like to talk about?
Okay. I would actually like to jump straight into real world River Heights, please.
Oh, a bold okay. move, if I do say.
Perchance to dream. But yes, it was my favorite part.
Okay.
So in the theater world, we have leading lady Tammy, leading man Bob, and Kathy, the understudy. And they are in a triangle d'amour.
They are.
Yes. That's French for love triangle.
Oh, thank you for the translation. I was a little lost there, but I'm back.
I think
now.
It might be pronounced triangle, but yeah. So they've got a real serious love triangle going on, and it is like making its way on stage, uh-huh. which is both like uncomfy, I'm sure, as an audience member, because it's like getting a little harassy, I think.
Yeah.
Like HR might need to get involved pretty soon. But also it's kind of ruining the play.
Yeah. And it's making the cast uncomfortable. I will also yeah. say, like, we so many times emphasize that this is an amateur theater troupe. And I'm like, Tammy, you are putting the A in amateur right now.
Truly. That's exactly right. yeah. She's like laying it on real thick in her love scenes. And it's funny because like everybody talks the whole time about what an amazing actress she is, except for the parts when she's with Bob, because she's like, I guess it's just like wantonly batting her eyelashes or something. I mean, it is a Civil War piece after all, so there's only so much she can do. But so I loved all of that. Then we have Callie Old Boy.
Callie Old Boy. Yeah, they always.
Callie Old Boy.
I think his name's Calhoun, but I.
It is.
Yeah. He gets a lot of nicknames.
Yeah, Callie Old Boy. Like, very British. He's this Shakespearean actor who I think has been, if I'm remembering correctly, like, he's friends with the quote unquote professional theatrical coaches, which are the directors. But he's like a grown up, you know, like, he's like played Lear, I think, you know, kind of grown up. And yeah. He is into Tammy, Crazy Tammy, of Tammy and Bob and Kathy. So we've got like kind of a real May December situation going on here with Tammy and Callie Old Boy, yep. Which is kind of weird, particularly when he full on acknowledges that he's got the hots for her and that he was trying to, he knew that she wouldn't like him just for himself because he was too old. I'm not saying these things. I'm saying what old Callie Old Boy thought. So when he discovered this like potential mystery in the attic with the puppets, he told her because he thought maybe that would be enough to keep her, you know, interested in him.
Yeah.
I was like, I think you need to pick better people.
I think so too. And then she, I mean, it worked. Well, quote unquote worked. Like, she just used him after that.
Yeah. Used him for his house access, his attic access.
Tammy.
Okay. But this gets us really to my favorite part in real world River Heights. So Tammy gets laryngitis, and Nancy had kind of been like, something's going on with Tammy. I have a feeling something's going to happen that she's not going to be able to perform. So I'm just going to be kind of unasked. And even though she has an actual understudy who's rehearsed the part, I'm going to just go ahead and learn all of her lines and all of her blocking on the sly, just in case I need to go on. Which, strangely enough, turned out to be a really good idea. I bet none of us saw that coming. So Tammy gets laryngitis, and all of a sudden Nancy's like, well, you know, funny story, I actually have been just casually memorizing this three-act play, you know, in between breakfast and mid-afternoon tea.
And solving this crime.
Solving mysteries and, you know, my blackout spells from getting hit on the head with cannonballs. So, but I've got it. I'm pretty sure I can go on tonight with no rehearsal.
Yep.
So while she is, like, basically stepping through the blocking with the, I wanted to say coach, because that's what they call him, with the director, Bess and George sneak out and go invite, like, everyone that Nancy knows in her life to come to this play. And I was like, as if this whole situation weren't, like, enough of a hellscape. You know, you have yep. to, you get thrown on to be the leading performer in this play with no rehearsal. Now everyone you know is also going to be there, including
front row,
like, in their best duds, like, church-going outfits. Not only does her dad and Hannah come, they get the Emerson guys to fly in from their summer camp job. It's summer again, guys. They fly in from their summer camp job, race to the theater practically on foot, and make it just in time for curtain. So yep. here's where the real world part comes in. And this is my favorite thing that's ever happened.
I wish you could see my face.
Oh, God. This is so cringe. So he's like, Ned's like, Nancy, what are we doing after the show? And she's like, this is awkward, but Bob here, the guy I was just canoodling with on stage, he kind of asked me out afterwards. And I said yes. So I'm sorry you flew in to see my show, but I can't go out with you tonight.
I'm a woman of principle, and I made a commitment.
Yeah. My dance card is full. Yeah.
I was like Nancy Marie Drew.
That's exactly right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Nancy. get a rain check from Bob.
Well, and if I can be so bold as to throw some fuel on this fire, we know from the Tammy, Bob, Kathy love triangle that Bob and Kathy are supposed to be in love.
That is correct.
So what is Bob doing stepping out on Kathy in this scenario? And so then basically Bob is, I guess, in an act of chivalry is like, well, we can all go on a date together.
And yeah, hey, Kathy, what are you doing? And she's like, nothing. I was waiting for you to ask me out, Bob, because we're dating and everything.
Yeah, so then he's like, okay, Kathy can be my date, and we'll just all go out. And I'm like, Kathy, do better.
Kathy, this is red flag city. Like, absolutely not. Bob is giving me real Tammy vibes right now.
Bob is giving me Tammy vibes.
Sorry, I really talked a lot, but that concludes RWRH.
That was honestly the crux of the book, so it deserved a lot of time.
Okay, your turn. Favorite parts?
I will say, in general, I just loved the footlighters, like that whole crew of people, like Mr. Spencer, who is the coach, which is actually like the director.
Yeah.
He is a tough cookie.
Yeah.
Like for a amateur kind of like, you know, summer stock, like people are doing this on the side.
Yeah.
They've got full-time jobs. Like he was really running a tight ship and like getting
he was rough.
Salty with people about their lines and their performances and their blocking. And I was like, Mr. Spencer, like,
yeah,
you need to cool your jets. This is like a volunteer operation. But anyway, and I like to think, you know, that he was just stressed out because he was losing sleep because he was seeing these dancing puppets. But no, I think it's just I think he just is a man of the stage and has standards and was in
exacting standards.
So, okay. Yeah. Mr. Spencer, we've talked about Tammy a bunch, but she is legitimately the worst. She's just mean to everyone. She makes people feel uncomfortable. She's like threatening people's jobs. She also is nuts because at one point Mr. Spencer decides like this play is actually not going to be ready. Like no one knows their lines. Chaos is unfolding everywhere. We need to do something different. So Bess sees in the newspaper that there's this master puppeteer in town, and she's like, maybe we could just like take a 2-week pause. We'll do a puppet show instead, have this guy perform, and then I'll give us more time. Mr. Spencer agrees. Tammy loses it. She loses it. She's like, you're not gonna steal my time in the spotlight. This play will be ready. She dresses up like a puppet, is dancing around on stage in the dark as if she's a puppet, knowing that that will lure Nancy in, since Nancy is questing on this
case. On the hunt for puppets.
Yeah. And Nancy goes up to be like, whoa, this puppet is like really weird. And then like attacks Nancy, like a hand-to-hand combat, which the likes of which I don't think we've actually seen before in a Nancy Drew book. I like was shocked. No.
I was too. And like the worst part about it, like the creepiest, she like was in puppet character the whole time. Like she was whacking her like with her like arms as if, wow, sorry, my heater just kicked on.
Don't be sorry, be warm.
To be off.
Be warm.
Like she's attacking her like in character as a puppet.
Yeah, with like a mask on and stuff. Yeah. Love it.
Terrible.
Love it. We've got Callie Old Boy, aka Calhoun, who just like is randomly quoting Shakespeare left and right. Like he has a Shakespeare quote for everything.
He has no personality outside of Shakespeare.
Correct. But he did also spontaneously know a lot about puppets. Like,
that's right.
Callie Old
the
Boy.
The history of marionettes.
You've been around for a while. What do you got on puppets? And he's like, well, funny you should ask.
Well, in 1743 Vienna,
In conclusion about the footlighters, I will say the most unbelievable and perhaps endearing thing about them is that River Heights is obsessed with the footlighters. Like they love this theater troupe, like to the point that the second the play happens, the newspapers are writing it up the next day, calling the actors out by name. The actors are minor local celebrities. Like it's a big deal, and I thought that was so charming.
Oh, it's definitely giving Guffman for sure.
Yes. Yeah, in general, I just the footlighters, so enjoyable.
Nice.
I would watch them in a play.
I loved the four amazing puppets.
Yes. Say more words.
So, like, we've got these giant, like, electrified puppets that are life-size puppets that basically don't, like, they're not marionettes. They don't need strings to run. They're kind of like robots, basically, which is kind of terrifying.
One of them has a clicker. It has, like, a remote control. You can.
They're remote controlled. It's so cool. They do have a clicker. That's exactly right. he gets CNN. So there's the ballerina of the cover, ballerinas. Mm-hmm. We have a clown. We have like a Spanish dancer man. And we have a scary witch.
I love the witch. The pictures of her are so cute in the book.
They're amazing. So I'll just say that like all of this part really reminded me of the party scene in the Nutcracker.
Oh my gosh, you're so right.
Yeah, so, yeah, Act One, Nutcracker. And it's not in every version, but I think it's the Balanchine version. But anyway, like, the gifts come in, and, like, one of them is a, you know, is a ballerina, and one is a clown. So anyway, I love that. Also, it was giving, like, strong, truly scrumptious from Chitty.
Yep, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
The little music box doll dance.
I love you.
So, yeah, I just liked all of them. I don't really understand how they worked or all of this, like, priceless technology that, you know, was hidden inside of them waiting to be discovered. But whatever. I mean, we'll get an electrician on that, I guess. So
I was fully willing to suspend my disbelief. I was like, this seems unlikely in 1962. But yes.
I was like, you don't need to explain it. I believe you. It's cool. Yeah. I've gotten on board immediately.
And at one point, we have to call in a police electrician to investigate them because they're scared they're going to get electrocuted. And they're like, call the police electrician. And his name was something.
I'm glad you brought that up.
His name was something really funny.
It was like Biff or Sully or something.
Bubba or something.
Yeah. It was, you know, they weren't like Officer McCormick.
No.
My question was, what is he, an electrician for the police, or is he a policeman who's an electrician?
You ask a fantastic question I had not considered. I assumed he was on the police force and specialized in
he was not like a bomb guy, but like an electrics guy.
Like, exactly. Like, I was gonna use that same example. Like, you've got like people who specialize in like diffusing bombs and stuff like that. I pictured him as someone on the police force who, I didn't picture him as, sometimes the light bulb goes out in the back cell and Scotty's got to come replace it.
See, that's what I thought. I was like, this is the guy who's replacing the swinging light bulb every 4 months.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah.
I think I'm feeling a little swayed because he wasn't Officer Bubba. He was just
Bubba. But that doesn't mean anything. Like, I don't know. Everybody weigh in. Is this a policeman electrician or an electrician for the police?
Wow. I'm going to lose sleep over this tonight. Yeah.
Samesies. This is the mystery, not the giant puppet roaming the backyard.
Oh, bless. Yeah.
All right. What else you got?
I've got one more.
Please.
I thought that the Tammy and Chuck storyline was probably one of my favorites in the book.
Oh. Say more words.
So Tammy, our diva, is seen leaving after one of the plays. She gets in the car with a random guy and is overheard saying, like, Chuck, let's get out of here. And they're like, who's this Chuck guy? So we're immediately like, she's in cahoots with Chuck. I assumed it was like her husband or some paramour that she's doing crime with. But it turns out it's her brother. They're both from California. They moved out this way together. Chuck is like also a really talented performer. He's like a lounge singer, essentially, would you say?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were doing good in California, but they've moved to River Heights. There's like money issues, all of that. She's pretending to be an amateur actress because though she's acted professionally, her family can't bear the fact that one of their daughters is a dirty professional actress. Like, how dare she? And they're kind of like, I get the impression that they are actually good people, but accidentally, on purpose, got sucked into a life of crime.
No, I agree with you on that. It seemed not, I don't think they're like master criminals. I think they made some mistakes.
Yeah, I think that they just started talking to some slippery operators who were like, oh, you want to pick up a little cash on the side? Like, is that a thing? Smooth criminal?
Nancy Drew and the slippery operators.
I think I was trying to say smooth criminal and I said slippery operator. So,
oh my God.
You know what I mean.
Amazing.
And they were like, okay, this doesn't seem that bad. But then it escalated and escalated. Like, oh, we've seen this happen in so many movies. And then you just feel so bad for them. And you're like, oh no, you are super in over your head now. You're in a pickle. And I think that happened to them. Tammy does apologize at the end of the book and is like, I've just been so stressed out about this money stuff and how we've gotten sucked in to this ring of jewel thieves. And I'm sorry, I've been an absolute menace on the stage. And I don't know.
Yeah, I take that with a grain of salt, though, because as she's saying that, she's still actively in the puppet costume she was using to beat the hell out of Nancy in. So
I know it was kind of like Saw. She was like the guy from Saw. Like
a little bit. I was like a little, maybe a little too late.
You have 10 seconds. I know, but it was
kind of, I take your point.
A redemptive arc and a three-dimensional character that we haven't really had before, you know?
You know what? I will accept that. You are not wrong.
They're usually either all bad or Nancy Drew. And
correct.
These people were like really interesting to me.
Yeah. There was some shades of gray there. Also, did it the funniest part for me with Chuck and Tammy was I immediately started thinking of Dirty Dancing. So when she comes out to her car and he's like, get in, we've got a gig tonight. And then they go like moonlight at this club. I instantly thought of like, my first thought when she got in the car to go do another gig was Dirty Dancing. I'm like, oh, are they going to go dance at the club?
You're so right.
And then it just got more Dirty Dancing because now they're also involved in a jewelry robbery at that club, just like in the show, just like in the movie.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah.
This book is Dirty Dancing. The end. Pretty much. End of episode.
Yeah. The end.
Okay, did you have any other favorite parts that we should discuss?
I will say quickly that I looked up what apple snow pudding is.
OMG, I wrote that down and I was like going to look it up and I'm like, nope, Kelly will do it. I don't need to do this. Kelly will know.
It is, it sounds, everybody said it's delicious. It sounds pretty suspect to me. You basically make kind of like applesauce.
Okay.
And then you fold that into like an egg white meringue, basically. Yeah.
Absolutely. Sign me up.
That's it.
Yeah, I'll eat that. You want to make it this week when you come?
No.
Wow. Okay.
Can we make like brownies?
Yes.
And call it apple snow pudding?
I don't know. I got like 6 cans of that tinned bread from our cooking episode, so I figured that's what we would eat the whole time.
We could pop that out and roast it over a fire.
We could
like campfire it. Camp out with the fire in it.
Probably the best use case for that bread.
I would imagine. I think it would be made a lot better if it weren't topped with that chicken stuff we put on it.
I loved that.
I mean, it wasn't bad. It just looked real bad.
I thought it was delicious.
We could make that this weekend.
Every bite of it. I stand by that.
It was like chipped chicken.
Nobody's like calling me Gordon Ramsay over here, but I thought that was delicious.
I mean, that was a full recipe, though, that you made.
I know. I was really proud of myself.
You should have been.
I was sweating bullets. Like, this is the most steps I've ever followed to put food into my face, but I did it, Kelly. I did it because I love you and I love this podcast and I love our listeners.
Thanks, Karen. Aw, they love you too. And so do I. Also, I just want to point out one side thing is that Nancy, by page 39, had already suffered 2 massive head injuries.
I know. I said that.
I felt like that was a little gratuitous.
I said that in the plot overview and I wrote in my notes, I said, double concussed? Seriously? Like,
yeah.
She got banged up and then she got full on attacked by Tammy. Like, this.
Yeah.
Was it dangerous lot. For such a an idyllic setting?
Yeah,
she
a lot of violence,
had a lot of trauma.
Actors are cray,
don't we know it? Okay, it would have been awesome if Kelly.
Okay, so
what would you fix about this book?
Okay, here's my only beef with this book is what I want to fix.
Single a ground beef,
one single beef patty with this book is that. The puppet didn't scare anybody away because, like, nobody would have been looking if it weren't for the puppet.
Correct.
They basically just called attention to the fact that there was something that other people didn't want them to see there.
Oh my God, you're so right. That seemed
like a loophole to me, a plot hole.
They basically put a beacon on the theater and they were like...
Yeah. Like, nobody was looking at the theater.
Better get a detective in here.
Right. And they were like, here, I'm just going to slap a giant puppet on it. Oh, everybody's looking now. Ruh-roh. Like, it didn't make any sense. So
slap a puppet on it. I can't. I cannot.
Plus, like, Tammy's general level of insanity, like, I just don't know that it can be explained away by, like, generalized stress.
I think that's right. It just seemed like a lot.
So it would have been awesome if Tammy was behind, like, these scare tactics with the intent of shutting down the footlighters and getting the quote-unquote professional coaches fired.
Oh.
Because then she wants to take the money she and her brother had made from the Dirty Dancing jewel thieving. They would buy that property and open their own, like, cabaret or whatever on the grounds.
Interesting. Interesting.
So it, like, it starts off innocently with, like, using these gigantic puppets to try to scare off the Spencers. But then she, like, is going to escalate it to, like, full on Phantom of the Opera style, like, dropping chandeliers on people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
To try to shut down the whole venue. And this ends up putting Callie Old Boy in the hospital. So when he, like, comes to in the hospital with, like, a gigantic 1920s World War I bandage wrapped around his head, he admits that he was helping Tammy to try to take over the theater because she had promised him he could produce one Shakespearean play a year. But he knows she was just using him, so he gives it all up.
As always, that is a fantastic book, and I wish that was the one we had read.
Thank you. No, it's just, it's a separate book, but...
No, yes. I love it.
Thank you. Did you have any suggestions?
I did, and it's adjacent to yours.
Ooh, okay, tell me.
So mine is also Tammy related. I really felt like, as I was reading this, that she was, like, truly in on the jewel heisting.
Same.
And then I was disappointed when she wasn't.
Yeah, an unwitting accomplice.
Yeah, she was just kind of, like, there when it happened, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm saying it would have been awesome if she was actually the ringleader of this jewel thieving operation. And her secret motivation is to get back to California to become a quote-unquote real actress. Mm-hmm. But she needs money to get back there and get her life started on the West Coast. Lord knows it is expensive.
Headshots are expensive, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that maybe she would have blackmailed her handsome and talented brother, Chuck, into schmoozing the rich ladies of River Heights. She assesses the jewels. She uses her theatrical capabilities to get the jewels off of the women. And she's been hiding them beneath the floorboards of the stage at the theater, which is why she's so beside herself and goes insane when she thinks she's going to be fired. She thinks they're going to do this puppet show. Yes. Basically, she thinks she's going to lose access to this venue where she's been, like, Smaug in The Lord of the Rings, you know, hoarding her treasures.
Her cash.
And
yeah.
She's not going to be able to get back to them.
Ooh, I love this. Okay.
There are some plot holes I need to fill in, but
I love this. No, and so then when Nancy starts snooping around on the stage, she's like, she discovers Tammy, who's, like, literally sitting dragon style across her hoard.
Exactly. Basically what I'm saying, and I think you are too, is that, like, we both wanted Tammy to have some more villainous agency.
Yes, Karen.
In this plot.
Precisely. Perfectly stated.
Team Tammy.
As per usual.
Tammy for the win.
Tammy is the supervillain who didn't have a chance.
Yes.
So this would be the point in the episode where if you are a Patreon, you should go to your Patreon account and listen to... Nope.
It's Sorry. Not.
Sorry. So, Karen, do we get...
I can't breathe. Oh, God.
Thank you so much.
me.
I'm so glad we have a written outline of these things.
Oh, we wouldn't stand
so we can stay on track.
A chance. Oh, God.
I can't even stay on track when it's in front of me. Karen, do you have anything to add to Nancy's never-ending resume?
I do. I have three things. Would you like to know what they are?
I would like to know three things. Yes, please.
Nancy is an amazing actress.
She sure is.
The best River Heights has ever seen. And she can learn lines very quickly.
Mind like a steel trap, baby.
The memorizer, they call her. That's true. That's true. Ask Ned, the memorizer.
I will. That's why he loves her.
You know, she's also a, well, I was going to say double threat, but we know she's a dancer as well. She is. Triple threat.
She is.
She's a tech theater expert. She gets signed on to essentially build sets, and she's like building and painting sets and moving them around and feels like pretty content and successful doing that, which I like about her.
I do too.
Gotta stay.
She doesn't always need to be in the spotlight.
Correct. Love that. She also has a healthy fear of electricity, which most things that happen, Nancy just barrels into and is like, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. I'll figure it out.
She doesn't have healthy respect for anything, including like bombs.
Fire, bombs.
And elephants. Yeah.
Water, underground layers, laser beams. She's just like.
Airplanes.
Airplane. It's fine. It's fine. But yet. When they bust
a live wire,
they bust open this puppet situation that has a clicker and wires and stuff. The criminal yells, "Don't touch that! You'll be electrocuted!" And for the first time ever, in 30 some odd books, she's like, "No way, Jose! I'm not touching that." And that's when they call in the police electrician or the electrician for the police. And I just thought that was very interesting. For some reason, that was the thing that she had a healthy boundary around. But yeah, that's what we know about Nancy, actress, tech theater, healthy fear of electricity
guru.
No, the opposite. That's like she's willing to admit defeat when it comes to wires.
You may have identified one of her few fears.
Well, she was also scared of Tammy.
She was scared of Tammy. You know what? You're not wrong.
She was like, I don't want to tangle with this woman. I don't want her as an enemy. This will not go well for me. And she was absolutely correct about that.
I also, though, think part of it was that Nancy doesn't want to be seen in the community as someone who doesn't, like, that leapfrogs. You know,
You're right.
I think she doesn't want to be the person that like takes unfair opportunities.
Hence her refusing rewards at every turn, which is another gripe for another day. But
we're going to have a conversation with Endy about that. Yes. So now is it time, Karen?
It is time.
Okay. So if you are a Patreon, now would be the time to go listen to section 4 on your Patreon account. Otherwise, just plow on ahead.
Kelly. Did you have any open questions at the end of this book?
Yes, I have one.
Okay.
Okay. Why would you have picked the cute little dancing ballerina puppet to scare people away instead of the terrifying witch puppet?
Well, Kelly, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
As a person that is terrified of ghostly entities in my vicinity. I would say I'm specific on a scale of types of ghosts that I'm scared of. It's like a cute ghost.
Oh, you think a cute ghost is scarier than a scary ghost?
I do. Like a little like adorable child that's like, "Mommy, I was just getting a peanut butter and jelly sandwich," and then I hate that. Like a witch ghost, I would expect, you know, and I'd be like, okay, well, my worst nightmare has come true. But like a little,
that's like terror on top of terror.
It's just what I know, you know. I'm like, oh, you're the jump scare I always knew was coming. But like a little cute bait and switch ghost, I don't know.
Oh, where like you're lured into thinking that it's benign.
Exactly.
I get it.
Exactly.
Okay, I'll accept that explanation.
I don't know if that helps or not, but
it does help. Thank you. I'll, you know what, at least it's an answer.
Like
I will accept it.
Something cute being scary is scarier to me than something scary being scary.
Okay. No. Okay. I get that, actually.
Okay.
Okay. How about you? Open question?
I have like a sleight of hand question.
Okay.
Did we ever learn how the emerald necklace was actually removed from the woman's neck? And how yes. it... We did?
Yes.
Okay, because
I... Shall I describe it for you?
Yeah, because I know that, like, Chuck approached the table at the nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
The two California dudes approached the table at the nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
He's schmoozing. They're talking to him. And then the woman's like, oh, my necklace. The guys run out. They don't have it. But we know that Chuck... How did they remove it from her person?
So Chuck is kind of standing in front of the lady. The California dudes kind of are behind and to the side of her. One of them cuts it off of her neck.
Oh.
And they drop it into Chuck's pocket.
Mm.
So they run away. California guys run away. They don't have it on them. Chuck takes his final bow and exits with his date, aka his sister, and he has the necklace. And then there's like a rendezvous where he gives the jewels back to California.
I see. So they are kind of like a little bit of a patsy situation in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a multi-parter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did they say that they cut it off of her?
They did.
I completely missed. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Huh. The more you know.
This is not a criminal enterprise education podcast. Just to be clear.
Nancy's resume is growing and so is mine.
We're all learning. So Karen, this week we are rating Nancy Drew and the Clue of the Dancing Puppet out of a 12 possible falling cannonballs.
Excellent.
So pray tell, what do you rate this book?
9 out of 12 falling cannonballs.
Ah, a veritable whirlwind of cannonballs.
I thought this book was just the perfect amount of simple, but also compelling for me.
Okay, say more words.
It's just like right in the sweet spot for me. I talked about this in my general thoughts and musings, but it wasn't too over the top. It wasn't too tangled up. But it also wasn't just like A to B to C kind of thing. I don't know. Okay. I just thought we really did it. I did remove 4 falling cannonballs for the insane amount of fat shaming in this book towards Bess.
No joke. It was bad.
It was honestly the worst of any of the Nancy Drew books we've read so far.
It was bad.
So -4 for that. But I did add 1 falling cannonball for spontaneous flights to support your bestie who just got the call they're going in for the lead in the town's hot new play.
Would you fly down here if I were going to be in Legally Blonde?
I'll be there in 45 minutes.
All right. Well, that's enough of a reason for me to audition.
I can't believe we got to this point after all that conversation.
I'm not going to audition.
No. Bait and switch.
But I'll perform it for you in my basement if you'll fly down.
Okay, perfect. Okay. What is your rating of this book? I cannot wait to hear.
10 out of 12 falling cannonballs.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we loved it.
Super fun. I loved how fast paced it was. Like, I loved all the, you know, I love a social activity, like, in between the sleuthing. -2 for, like, drawing attention to the thing you're trying to distract people from. That was problematic.
Honestly, I don't mean to interrupt you, but, like, that observation that you made just cracked this book wide open for me. I'm like, you are so, there would have been no book.
No, just like, don't pull the puppets out. Nobody knows anything's going on.
They could have succeeded without this whole puppet shenanigan. Brilliant, brilliant. I'm sorry. Correct. Continue with your math.
-2 for, like, Tammy's whole motivation, which I still don't understand. Like,
fair.
She's wound up. -2 for, like, generally the secondhand embarrassment I experienced from Nancy's, like, double booking on her date due to the like the surprise fly-in of the boyfriends. Yeah. I didn't like that. +2 for just like the general theater setting. You know, I love that. And all of the like semi-hilarious Shakespeare quotes.
Yeah.
That was fun. And +2 for Nancy just being like, she was like a full-on boss in this book. Yep. I like this felt like substantially more I don't know, just like something to me. Like she was getting the full respect of the police force on this book, to the point where we didn't talk about this before, but Captain McGinnis makes a comment early on in the book that someday he really hopes that Nancy will let him hire her to be a detective on the force.
Nancy. And she's and like, I was like, I'm coming for your job, McGinnis.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, watch your back, McGinnis. But yeah, just like everybody treated her with a ton of respect. And in the meantime, she was just like asking for reports and updates. And they were like, yes, ma'am. It was amazing. I loved it.
Yep.
I don't understand why they're doing it from the context of them actually being the police and her not being the police. But for the sake of Nancy getting respect, I'm in. Yeah.
They know what's good for them.
I believe that adds up to 10.
That is some stunning math. Thank you so much. You. So 9.5 out of 10. It is our collective rating.
Amazing. Or,
no, 9.5 out of 12.
Out of 12.
Why did we do a rating of 12? It doesn't matter.
Karen, honestly, we get asked this a lot. I think it was because the first book was about a clock.
You're right. You are
And
right.
I think we made a decision that now we're in.
It's we locked it in. Yeah, you can't go back.
But here we are.
Can't move the goalpost.
So Karen, what are we reading next week?
We are reading Nancy Drew and the Clue of the Moonstone Castle Mystery, which I am personally very excited about because we got a castle on the cover. One. I haven't either, and I'm getting strong Ren Faire vibes. And I
should we dress up?
I will. You know I will.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love it. If you would be so kind, listeners, if you would please consider rating, reviewing, and subscribing, and tell a friend. And you can find us on Instagram at It's a Clue Podcast.
You can find us on It's a Clue.
Great.
Our new app, It's a Clue.
You can find us on, have you heard about our app, Instagram?
You could also, if you want to, become a Helen Corning friend on Patreon, which is a bestie of the show. You get a shout out on the show, like Emily, at the beginning of this episode. And we've got some short bonus content for our episodes that started with season 3 about how we would solve the mystery. And what's the other thing? Oh, you can vote on Super Sleuth titles to help us decide the course of the season.
It's a staggering power.
It is.
And Karen, remember what we learned today in Nancy Drew and the Clue of the Dancing Puppet.
Yes, ma'am. Tell me.
If you think the lead actress of the play you're working on might be a gigantic jerk or even a potential criminal, steal her part.
And with that, happy sleuthing!
It's a Clue is hosted by Kelly Biscopink and Karen Farmer. Our logo is designed by Courtney Kyle. You can find her on social media at I Am Courtney Kyle. The It's a Clue theme song was written and recorded by Danny W. You can find her on Facebook at Danny W. Music. Audio engineering is graciously done by our friend Mark Goodlow.